Welcome to Tech Leadership Deep Dive. Just a quick note that this entire episode is generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is FlowState Pro, the imaginary productivity app that claims to triple your focus in just 7 days. Again, that's completely fictional and not a real product. Some information in this episode may be hallucinated, so please double-check anything important before acting on it. I'm Marcus, and today we're diving into Will Larson's Staff Engineer, Leadership Beyond the Management Track. With me is Diana Chen, a staff engineer at a Fortune 500 tech company who's been applying these concepts for the past 3 years. Diana, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. This book really changed how I think about senior technical roles.
Let's start with the basics. What problem is this book trying to solve?
It addresses something most tech companies struggle with. You have brilliant engineers who want to stay technical but also want to have real impact and grow their careers. Traditionally, the only path up was management.
And that creates a problem, right? You lose good engineers and gain potentially bad managers.
Exactly. Larson argues that companies need a parallel track, the staff engineer role, that provides senior leadership without people management. But most organizations have no idea how to structure or support these roles.
What gives Larson the authority to write this book? What's his background?
He's been a staff engineer himself at companies like Dig, Uber, and Stripe. He's also managed engineering teams, so he understands both sides. More importantly, he interviewed dozens of staff engineers across different companies to understand the patterns.
That research approach is crucial because these roles vary so much between companies, right?
Right. A staff engineer at Google looks different from one at a startup, but Larson found common threads that make the role work anywhere.
Before we dig into those patterns, why is this book needed now? Haven't senior technical roles always existed?
They have, but they were often informal or poorly defined. As tech companies matured and grew larger, they needed more structure. The pandemic also accelerated distributed work, making clear leadership roles even more critical.
And without that structure, what happens?
You get what Larson calls terminal senior engineers. People who are technically excellent but plateau because there's no clear path forward. They either leave for management roles they don't want or leave the company entirely.
So the stakes are high. Companies lose their best technical talent.
And they lose institutional knowledge, technical judgment, and the ability to tackle their hardest problems.
Let's talk about Larson's core thesis. What's his main argument about how staff engineering should work?
His central claim is that staff engineers operate through influence, not authority. Unlike managers who have formal power over people and resources, staff engineers lead through expertise, relationships, and strategic thinking.
That sounds harder to execute than traditional management. How does influence actually work in practice?
Larson breaks it down into 3 key areas. First, you need deep technical credibility. People have to trust your judgment. Second, you need to understand the business well enough to align technical decisions with company goals.
And the third?
You need to be able to work across teams and organizations. Staff engineers often work on problems that span multiple groups, so you're constantly building consensus with people who don't report to you.
This feels like a fundamental shift from how we usually think about technical roles. Most engineers are used to being told what to build.
That's exactly right. Larson argues that staff engineers need to develop what he calls product sense and business sense alongside their technical skills. You can't just be a really good coder anymore.
What's the intellectual history here? Where did this idea come from?
Larson traces it back to Bell Labs and places like that, where senior technical people led research and innovation. But he's responding to more recent management theories that tried to separate technical and people leadership completely.
So he's saying that separation was too clean, that you need technical leaders who can also navigate organizational dynamics?
Exactly. The best technical decisions require understanding people, politics, and business context. Pure technical optimization often misses the mark.
How does this compare to what other people in the field were saying?
Most career advice for engineers focused on either going into management or becoming a very senior individual contributor. Larson's arguing for a third path, technical leadership that's explicitly organizational and strategic.
And why is this perspective distinct from traditional engineering management?
Engineering managers focus on people development, resource allocation, and execution. Staff engineers focus on technical strategy, architectural decisions, and solving the hardest technical problems. The skill sets overlap, but the core responsibilities are different.
Let's get concrete. Larson identifies four main archetypes of staff engineers. Can you walk us through them?
Sure. The first is the tech lead. They're responsible for a specific team's technical direction. They work closely with the engineering manager to guide day-to-day technical decisions.
Can you give me a real example of what that looks like?
At my company, our payments team has a staff engineer who's the tech lead. When we needed to rebuild our payment processing system, she owned the technical architecture, made decisions about which technologies to use, and guided the team through implementation.
What makes that different from a senior engineer doing the same work?
The scope and accountability. She had to consider not just technical elegance, but business requirements, team capabilities, and long-term maintenance. She was accountable for the success of a multi-million dollar system.
Got it. What's the second archetype?
The architect. These folks focus on technical direction across multiple teams or the entire organization. They're thinking about system design, technology choices, and technical standards.
Give me a concrete example of an architect in action.
We had a situation where different teams were building APIs with completely different patterns. Our staff architect created a set of API standards, built tooling to support them, and worked with each team to adopt the new approach.
That sounds like it requires a lot of diplomacy. You're essentially telling other engineers how to work.
Exactly. She had to convince each team that the standards would make their lives easier, not harder. She couldn't just mandate it. She had to build buy-in through demonstration and collaboration.
What's the third archetype?
The solver. These are the people who parachute in to tackle the hardest, most ambiguous problems. Usually problems that span multiple teams or require deep technical expertise.
Can you paint a picture of what that looks like day to day?
Last year, we had a performance issue that was affecting multiple services. No single team owned it, and the root cause wasn't obvious. Our staff solver spent 3 weeks debugging across 6 different systems, found the issue, and implemented a fix that improved performance by 40%.
That sounds like detective work as much as engineering.
It is. Solvers need to be comfortable with ambiguity and uncertainty. They often work on problems where it's not even clear if there's a solution.
And the fourth archetype?
Right hand. These folks partner directly with senior engineering leadership. They help directors and VPs execute on technical strategy and organizational initiatives.
That sounds more organizational than the others. What does a right hand actually do?
I know someone in this role who helped our CTO reorganize our engineering teams. She analyzed our current structure, proposed a new team topology, and managed the transition. Very little coding, but highly technical strategic work.
How do these archetypes interact with each other? Do they compete or collaborate?
In healthy organizations, they collaborate heavily. The architect might identify a cross-cutting problem, a solver might investigate it, and tech leads might implement solutions on their teams.
Larson also talks about what he calls glue work. Can you explain that concept?
Glue work is all the non-coding activities that make engineering teams successful. Things like improving processes, facilitating discussions, mentoring other engineers, and coordinating between teams.
Why is this concept important for staff engineers?
Because staff engineers often do a lot of glue work, but it's invisible and undervalued. Larson argues that companies need to recognize and reward this work explicitly, especially for staff engineers.
Give me an example of valuable glue work that might go unnoticed.
Our staff engineer spent 2 months improving our incident response process after a major outage. She created runbooks, trained people, and set up monitoring. It prevented 3 potential outages over the next year, but it's hard to measure that impact.
So the challenge is making the invisible visible. How does Larson suggest staff engineers approach this?
He recommends keeping detailed records of your work and its impact. Write down problems you've solved, decisions you've influenced, and systems you've improved. Make your contributions concrete and measurable.
Let's talk about another key framework, what Larson calls the staff engineer's toolkit. What are the core tools he identifies?
The first major tool is writing. Staff engineers need to be excellent technical writers. You're constantly documenting decisions, proposing solutions, and explaining complex topics to different audiences.
What does good technical writing look like in this context?
It's clear, structured, and adapted to your audience. A proposal for other engineers looks different from a summary for executives. Larson emphasizes that writing forces you to clarify your thinking and creates lasting records of decisions.
Can you give me a specific example of how writing has been valuable in your role?
I wrote a technical RFC proposing a new caching strategy. The writing process helped me identify gaps in my reasoning, and the document became a reference that guided implementation across 4 different teams over 6 months.
What's the second major tool in the toolkit?
Meetings and facilitation. Staff engineers spend a lot of time in meetings, but they need to make those meetings productive. This means setting clear agendas, guiding discussions, and ensuring decisions get made.
That sounds like project management. How is it different when a staff engineer does it?
The focus is on technical decision-making and problem-solving rather than timeline and resource management. You're facilitating discussions about architecture, trade-offs, and technical strategy.
Give me a concrete scenario where this skill matters.
We had 5 teams that needed to integrate their services, but they all had different opinions about the approach. I facilitated a series of technical discussions, helped the teams understand each other's constraints, and guided them to a consensus solution.
What's the third tool?
Building and maintaining relationships. Staff engineers work across organizational boundaries, so you need strong relationships with people in different teams, functions, and levels of the company.
How do you build those relationships as a technical person? It's not always natural for engineers.
Larson suggests starting with shared technical interests and problems, help people solve their challenges, share knowledge, and be generous with your expertise. The relationships develop naturally from there.
Can you share an example of how a relationship helped you accomplish something technical?
Had a good relationship with someone on the infrastructure team. When we needed to make changes that would affect their services, I could have informal conversations to understand their concerns and design a solution that worked for everyone.
Let's talk about implementation. Say someone listening to this wants to become a staff engineer. What's the first step?
Larson recommends starting with what he calls expanding your scope. Look for opportunities to work on problems that affect multiple teams or require cross-functional collaboration.
How do you identify those opportunities? They're not always obvious.
Pay attention to recurring problems, inefficiencies, or places where teams struggle to coordinate. Often the best opportunities are things that everyone knows are problems, but no one has time to fix.
Walk me through a specific example of how someone might expand their scope.
Let's say you notice that multiple teams are struggling with similar database performance issues. Instead of just fixing it for your team, you could investigate the root cause, propose a company-wide solution, and coordinate implementation across teams.
That makes sense. What's the second step in the progression?
Develop your communication and influence skills. Start writing more technical documents, volunteering to present at engineering meetings, and taking on some of that glue work we discussed earlier.
How long does this typically take? Are we talking months or years?
Larson suggests it usually takes 2 to 3 years to develop the skills and track record needed for a staff role, but it varies a lot based on your starting point and the opportunities available.
What are the most common mistakes people make when trying to transition to staff engineer roles?
The biggest one is focusing too much on technical complexity and not enough on business impact. You can build the most elegant system in the world, but if it doesn't solve a real problem, it won't get you promoted.
That's interesting. What does focusing on business impact look like practically?
Ask yourself, what problems is the business trying to solve? How do technical decisions support those goals? Can you quantify the impact of your work in terms that matter to the company?
What's the second common mistake?
Trying to do everything alone. Staff engineers need to learn how to multiply their impact through other people. If you're still thinking like an individual contributor, you'll hit a ceiling.
How do you make that mental shift from individual work to multiplied impact?
Start looking for opportunities to mentor other engineers, create tools or processes that help multiple people, and focus on problems that affect the whole organization rather than just your immediate work.
Let's talk about the timeline. How long does it typically take to see results when applying these concepts?
It depends what you mean by results. You can start having more influence within a few months by writing better technical documents and taking on more cross-team work. But getting promoted to staff engineer typically takes 1 to 2 years of consistent effort.
What about adapting these methods to different contexts? Not everyone works at a tech company.
Principles translate well to any organization with complex technical systems. The specific archetypes might look different, but the focus on influence, cross-functional work, and technical leadership applies broadly.
If someone could only implement one thing from this book, what would you recommend?
Start writing more. Document your technical decisions, write proposals for improvements, and share your knowledge with others. Writing forces clarity and creates a record of your impact.
Let's shift to critical evaluation. What does this book do brilliantly?
Legitimizes and structures a career path that was previously informal and poorly understood. Larson gives both individuals and organizations a framework for thinking about senior technical leadership.
Research approach also seems strong. Interviewing dozens of practicing staff engineers grounds the advice in reality.
Absolutely. These aren't theoretical ideas. They're patterns that work in practice across different companies and industries.
Where does the book fall short or overpromise?
It's very focused on larger tech companies. Some of the advice doesn't translate well to smaller organizations where roles are less specialized and hierarchy is flatter.
What else does it miss?
The book could do more to address the politics and organizational dysfunction that can make these roles difficult. It assumes a relatively healthy engineering organization, which isn't always the case.
How does it compare to other books on engineering leadership?
Most other books focus on management or very senior individual contributor skills. This occupies a unique middle ground, technical leadership without people management. I haven't seen that addressed as directly elsewhere.
What important topics does the book leave out that readers should seek elsewhere?
Doesn't go deep on specific technical skills like system design or architecture. It also doesn't address compensation, negotiation, or dealing with difficult organizational dynamics.
Are there other resources you'd recommend to complement this book?
For system design, I'd recommend Designing Data-Intensive Applications.
For organizational dynamics, The Manager's Path covers a lot of the political and interpersonal challenges that Larson doesn't address in depth.
Let's talk about the book's broader impact. How has it influenced the field since publication?
I've seen more companies create formal staff engineer tracks and better define what these roles actually do. The language and frameworks from the book have become pretty standard in tech recruiting and career development.
Have you seen any criticism or pushback on the ideas?
Some people argue it creates another layer of hierarchy without clear accountability. There's also concern about grade inflation, companies promoting people to staff level without giving them appropriate scope or resources.
Those seem like implementation problems rather than fundamental issues with the concept.
I think so. The ideas are sound, but they require organizational commitment and clear expectations to work properly.
How has the field evolved since the book was written? Are the ideas still current?
If anything, they've become more relevant. Remote work has made influence and communication skills even more important. And as technical systems get more complex, the need for senior technical leadership continues to grow.
Has the pandemic changed how these roles work?
It's made the relationship building aspects more challenging, but it's also created more opportunities for cross-team collaboration as organizational boundaries have become more fluid.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important insight from this book?
That technical excellence alone isn't enough for senior leadership roles. You need to combine deep technical skills with business understanding, communication ability, and organizational influence.
And if someone walks away from this conversation with just one actionable insight, what should it be?
Start looking for technical problems that span multiple teams or affect the broader organization. Those are your opportunities to develop staff engineer skills and demonstrate the kind of impact that leads to career growth.
That's practical and specific. Diana, this has been incredibly valuable. Thanks for sharing your experience with Larson's framework.
Thanks for having me, Marcus. I hope listeners find it as useful as I have.
That's a wrap on our deep dive into Staff Engineer, Leadership Beyond the Management Track. Remember, technical leadership is about influence, impact, and solving problems that matter to the business, not just writing beautiful code.